Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. One of the challenges faced by this country in the late 1960s was the severe and undeniable pollution crises we were experiencing, from burning rivers to deadly smog. Ohio's Cuyahoga River literally caught fire due to industrial waste. The Potomac River was polluted from the hundreds of millions of gallons of waste dumped into it every day. There was a massive oil spill off the coast of Santa Barbara in 1969, and Lake Erie was so oxygen depleted that large parts of it could no longer sustain life. There was pressure for the federal government to act, and so a Republican president, Richard Nixon, decided to consolidate environmental duties that had been scattered across many agencies into one, creating the Environmental Protection Agency. The EPA set new national standards, enforced them, and used science and funding to push states and industry to reduce pollution. The result has been a dramatic reduction of air and water pollution, hazardous sites have been cleaned up, and we've experienced improved public health. But the Trump administration has set on a course of reversing many of these accomplishments. Trump's EPA is focused on rolling back environmental regulation, weakening climate rules, and reducing oversight of industry. What might the result of that be? Well, we'll spend this hour talking about that with Michael Regan. He was the EPA's 16th administrator during the Biden administration. He was also secretary of the North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality and is now a Polis Distinguished Fellow at Duke University's Sanford School of Public Policy. And he joins us in the studio. Welcome.
Hey, good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Nice to have you here. The unconventional, I guess it's unconventional, the unconventional approach that the Trump administration has taken to running government and the changes it has made have led to many former government officials who ran departments to look back at those departments and cluck or be just depressed by what they're seeing. I'm just curious, what's it like looking at the organization that you ran from the outside right now?
Well, Mike, I can tell you it is extremely, extremely tough to look at the organization. But, you know, peer beyond the organization and the people. Most people that work at the US EPA and dedicate themselves to public service are not political. They are public servants that have some connection to the environment, public health, and they're not being paid as well as their corporate counterparts. So it's not for the money. It's for the passion and the belief. And so when I look at those who have dedicated 20, 30 years of their career to scientific integrity, leveraging data, economics, and technology to ensure that every single person in this country is protected under the law, it's really tough. And then you look at the erosion of the institution.
Yeah.
Mike, I can tell you when I was appointed EPA administrator, I had conversations with former administrators spanning Republican and Democratic administrations. I think we all understood the mission, the importance of the mission. We may have some differences on how fast, how stringent, but there was never a desire to abdicate the responsibilities of protecting the American public. What we're seeing today, it's not normal, it's not right, and I think it's un-American.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the people who work in these agencies in Washington, and you're familiar with the EPA, so we'll talk about that. But we hear a lot today about how people who work within the Justice Department are feeling about what's being done to the Justice Department as Trump politicizes the department and files frivolous lawsuits that are thrown out and goes against a tradition when the Justice Department used to bring a suit, they were taken seriously.
Yes.
And now that's no longer the case, and that's depressing a lot of people who used to work there and people who work there. We have been given to believe that the people who work in these agencies are bureaucrats. Some believe they're part of the deep state. They are people who try to put up roadblocks to the people in power in the administration that has been elected, and because they know better, because they've been there for years, and they'll outlive, outlast the current administration, whoever is in the White House. I'm sure there's some truth to some of that. But you just said that they really believe in what they do, and when they see an administration working at cross purposes, it hurts.
Yes.
Why do we believe these people are just bureaucrats?
You know, I think that there has just been a stigma on public servants in general, whether it's state or federal level, and you know, the reality is they're professionals. They're not bureaucrats per se. They're professionals. It's their job to present accurate information based on the question that is being posed to them. The politicals are posing the questions, and ultimately the politicals are the decision makers. So the professionals, the public servants, the so-called bureaucrats, they are answering questions of those who are in control. So if I'm looking at a specific policy, and if I want to move in a specific direction, it is the job of those at the agency to present to me a number of options, from the most conservative to those that may be getting close to court challenges and legal questioning, but it may be possible to take that risk. They present options, and they are very clear about the pitfalls, the downfalls, and the upsides. It's not their job to try to dissuade, from a personal opinion, those who are in power during that presidential or gubernatorial administration. And so I know a lot of people don't see behind the curtains in the sausage making, but those who are dedicating themselves to science, economics, integrity, technology, they are presenting the politicals the best information possible.
But everybody in politics, every human being has a political point of view. Everybody has biases. And if the people who are the so-called experts, whether they're working within the EPA or whatever agency you're running, whether they're working within that agency and have for years, whether their science is presenting you facts, when they present you things that go up against your preconceived notions, it doesn't seem to be breaking through in this administration. how did you? You must have had some preconceived notions that you found out were not exactly accurate when you were presented with information. How do you deal with that?
Listen, I think most of us follow the science and follow the law. There's a spectrum, and when you believe that you can develop a regulation that is very strong, and you sit down with the professionals, they will tell you from a scientific, legal, and the cost-effective or available technologies of industry, they will give you a combination of scenarios to determine just how fast and strong you can go. You're always up against whether or not the technologies are cost-effective or whether you're breaking the law. I believe in many cases with this administration, the abdication of their responsibility to protect public health, they are not following the law. And it is my belief that many of their actions will be challenged in court. And it is my hope that maybe not all, but most of their actions are overturned or overruled because the scientific record and the recommendations from the experts, I can tell you, are not being followed.
It seems that from the outside that the Trump administration is doing everything it can to break government, because A, Republicans don't like government, and they don't hide that fact. We have Grover Norquist saying he wants to make it the size of it. He can fit it into a teacup. So they're breaking these agencies, probably deliberately in some cases, maybe inadvertently. I don't think the people in charge of DOGE knew anything about anything, and they just came in and broke everything they could. But you were sandwiched in between as the EPA director. the first and the second Trump administrations. And one of the things that you said at the time of taking over the first time after the first administration was that you had to rebuild morale.
Yes.
What's it going to be like for the person who succeeds Mr. Zeldin, who is running it now, when he leaves office? What's it going to be like to rebuild that agency?
It's going to be extremely tough, but doable. I'm spending a lot of time on college campuses all across the country. And the number one question is, why should I dedicate my life and career to public service, period? So I think that we all have some work cut out for us to do to ensure that current and future generations continue to believe in public service the way many of us do. But let me be very clear. When I became EP administrator, there were a number of employees that had weathered the storm that were ready to make up for lost time. And they helped us recruit and retain talent over those 4 years that helped the Biden administration do some pretty amazing things. So I'm not ready to give up on people, and I'm not ready to give up on public service, but that doesn't mean we don't have our work cut out for us.
We'll talk about, as we go through the hour, we'll talk about some of the things that are changing under the Trump administration with regard to regulations that the EPA has been famous for. But how do you explain? The EPA has been very successful in changing the air we breathe, the water that we depend on for life, and a lot of other things. How do you explain the Trump administration's approach to rolling back all these protections that have held fast for so long that have improved the environment, lessened pollution, improved health? What's the end game here?
I think the end game is exactly what you said earlier, which is break it.
But why? We all have to breathe the air. We all have to drink the water.
You know, I can't say that I understand the mentality. I can't even say
is
that.
Is it purely money? Is it purely influence from lobbyists? Is it purely grift behind the scenes where I'll get paid off if I let you do whatever you want to do?
Well, you and I both know that there is a perception that government is too big. And there are all kinds of conspiracies about the government having too much influence over individuals' lives. I don't think we were at that point. I also think that there is a preconceived notion, which is incorrect, that regulations actually cost companies profit and competitiveness. I've spent a lot of time with CEOs of multiple industries across this country, and technology standards and regulations provide certainty for investment. Again, Mike, it's always been a question of should we go as far or as fast, but it's never been we don't need these guardrails.
Right
now, they're throwing the guardrails in the trash.
Well, I wonder, that's why I started by mentioning Richard Nixon, a Republican who started the agency in the first place, and you worked for the EPA earlier in your career during the Clinton and the George W. Bush administrations. How would you compare how those two administrations dealt with and considered the EPA and its regulatory framework and the way the Trump administration?
It's night and day. You know, actually, I was a very young college graduate when I started during the last 2 years of the Clinton administration, and I did about 6 or 7 years during the Bush administration. And boy, Mike, when I look back on it, I had such strong feelings about, wow, the Bush administration is not going as fast and being as strong as the Clinton administration. Well, when you look back today, boy, you know, you're thinking, what the hell? I look back and I say during the Clinton administration, the Bush administration, we were making progress at reducing pollution.
Michael Regan is with us. He was the 16th administrator of the EPA. He's now the Polis Distinguished Fellow at the Duke University Sanford School of Public Policy. We have a lot to talk about, including climate change and more. Stick with us. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Michael Regan, who ran the EPA under the Biden administration. And before that, he was the 17th secretary of the North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality. He joins us in the studio this morning. The current head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Lee Zeldin, appears to be taking an approach that is exactly the opposite of yours. You worked on regulatory expansion. He's for deregulation. You strengthened existing rules. He's repealing or reducing them. You worked on expanding social justice programs. He's reducing emphasis on that. You increased enforcement of regulations. He's reducing enforcement. Bottom line, your approach was to focus on climate change and economic justice, as I recall. He's focusing on deregulation and cost savings. Both are valid approaches. I mean, they are. And maybe there are some cost savings to be had, and maybe we don't need all those deregulations. But is this the typical pendulum that we always witness when an administration changes, or is it something more than that?
It's absolutely more than that. Again, I think different administrations have different degrees by which they view cost effectiveness and adequate protection. What we're seeing now is a complete abdication of the responsibility of the agency. You can't throw all of the rules out. You can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You can't roll back every regulation. And listen, that's not just Democrats talking. I think when you look at the MAHA moms and their allergic reaction to the current administration's regulation of these forever chemicals, by God, I think that I've worked with Republicans and Democrats at the state level and the federal level. This misnomer or this myth that Republicans hate every regulation is just not true, Mike. Right. And I think that I equate today's politics to professional wrestling. There's a level of drama and theater, but behind the scenes, most people, Republican, Independent, and Democrat, believe that there is a way that you can look at reigning in pollution that threaten our children, that threaten our environment, that threaten our economy. This administration isn't trying to thread that needle at all.
He talks about getting rid of regulations and saving money, et cetera. You have said, I forgot where I got this quote, but you have said, we don't need a ton of regulations. We need smart regulations that give flexibility so that markets and technologies can achieve those environmental goals. It doesn't sound all that different from what Lee Zeldin is saying, so talk about that.
Well, you just can't be indiscriminate. Environmental protection and economic prosperity are not mutually exclusive. They go hand in hand. And you need smart regulations that provide some certainty so that industry can invest in the latest and greatest technologies so that they can be globally competitive, but also so that they can protect public health and the environment. And so we really need to be sure when you think about electricity generation, when you think about water infrastructure, by God, I think you need some regulations to ensure our waters are not polluted. But you need to invest in the infrastructure so that we are getting clean, affordable, safe drinking water and the systems aren't been hacked by a foreign entity.
You know, I mentioned those rivers on fire in Ohio back in the 1960s that led to the establishment of the EPA. I mentioned the Potomac River. I grew up in D.C.
Yeah.
I grew up in Alexandria, and I know what that river used to smell like, particularly in the summertime, because it was an open sewer. And this is the nation's capital.
Yeah,
they cleaned that river up, and now the waterfront is full of restaurants and places to people to go and tourists. So the economic impact of cleaning up that environment is incalculable. Why would anybody fight that?
People take it for granted. I genuinely believe when you travel the country the way I have, I've been to over 45 states. I've been to over 14 countries as EPA administrator. And you listen, I've been trout fishing with Republican governors. I've been on conservation trips with Republican congressional delegations. They love the water. They love the land. Mm-hmm. They love to hunt and fish. Mm-hmm. You can go too far. And I think this administration is going too far. We can have a healthy debate on how many regulations are too many or whether regulations are too stringent. We should not be debating whether you need these regulations at all. Because of what you just laid out, the history of rivers being on fire, the levels of asthma attacks that we've seen in the past that we no longer are seeing, you just can't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
I mean, a lot of things are being happening in all these different agencies, and we're only a year into it, so we have 3 years, 2.5 years left to go. Can you reel it back in, to use a fishing analogy? Can you reel it back in at some point in the future, or is it going to be too late?
No, Mike, we need courage. Yes, we can reel this back in. This is a great country. Anything we want to do and we set our minds to, we can do. We really need to come together as Americans and understand that we are not fighting against one another. We are fighting to be globally competitive with China, with the Middle East, with our adversaries. And in order to do that, you have to have a healthy environment. You can't have sick people. You can't have sick children. You can't have an antiquated healthcare system that isn't protecting Americans, because when we're healthy, we are our best. And the other thing is, this isn't the 1960s and 70s where we're hugging trees. We're talking about investing in the latest and greatest technologies, battery storage, solar, wind. These are not only superior technologies, Mike. If you look at the cost,
they're cheaper.
They're cheaper.
Yes.
I mean, who the hell actually believes that a coal plant is faster, cheaper, and healthier than some other cleaner solutions?
Who believes there is such a thing as clean coal? It's an oxymoron. It's simply not possible. I want to talk about those technologies in a second, but you mentioned the tree huggers of the 1970s, which led to Earth Day, which kind of was all part of the creation of the EPA. Those tree huggers were prescient, because we're living through climate change now, and there are still, within the administration at least, and probably elsewhere, climate change deniers. How can you deny what we're living through? You can't. At some point, the rubber hits the road, and it's going to hit the road, I think, when you can't afford homeowners insurance because of storms and things like that are blowing roofs off houses on a regular basis, when floods are washing away entire neighborhoods. That's when it becomes unaffordable to live, that's where the rubber meets the road. So at what point, however, will it be too late? And if the United States withdraws from its efforts to control climate change, or to do what it can to mediate the things that are causing the climate to get hotter, does it really matter? If the rest of the world's on board, can we do that much damage?
We, Mike, have to lessen the intensity of what we are experiencing now. On the coast of North Carolina, there are homes falling in the ocean.
Right.
And in the mountains of North Carolina, we've just seen floods like we've never seen with Hurricane Helene.
Mm-hmm.
Not too long ago, Charlotte was wrestling with massive floods in places that the city had not planned for, that they never thought they would experience. And we saw the subways in New York filled with water. Mike, all you have to do is look out the window or turn on the television and look at an objective local television station, and you will see that we are living and experiencing these now.
But it's a hoax, Michael. we were told it's a hoax. At what point can you continue to be believed when you say it's a hoax, when your house is 6 feet underwater?
You know, the unfortunate part is sometimes people believe experience is the best teacher. And we're seeing too many Americans who can't afford their energy bills because of bad decisions. We're seeing so many people that are dealing with loss of insurance because they're flooding. There's flooding in places that has never occurred. You know, Mike, we are living in a time where we have to figure out how to battle disinformation and present sound science. And we can't go too far either.
Right.
We have to have a balanced approach. Most people in this country are center right, center left. Most people in this country want to move with expediency, want to have a balanced, strong approach. We, all political parties, we've got to strike a better balance and meet people where they are. And Mike, I can't say that any party has perfected that yet. I believe that the Democratic Party is doing a better job. But it's a scary time. But I do believe that the American people are ready for objective information. We just have to figure out a better way to communicate it.
There's another aspect of climate change that we haven't talked about, and we're kind of living through part of it right now. There have always been droughts. There will always be droughts, and we're living through a drought in North Carolina, and particularly in this region of North Carolina. We're in extreme drought, and farmers are very worried because the wheat crop that they grow right now, which loves dry weather. They can't plant it. It won't grow because it's too dry. It's too dry too soon. And that's a harbinger of things to come as they plant other crops going through this farming season. They're facing that. They're facing rising prices for diesel. They're facing rising prices for and availability of fertilizer because of what's going on in the Strait of Hormuz. These people feed us. And as climate change, we're talking about the peach crop in Georgia, that they're not going to be able to grow peaches much longer because it's getting too hot in Georgia for peaches. Are we taking adequate precautions to protect agriculture? Are we?
No.
Are we hurting it?
In general, most people just don't understand where our food comes from.
Harris Teeter. Publix.
This week alone, I've spent time talking with my good friend, former USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack, about these issues. I had lunch yesterday with Commissioner Steve Troxler talking about these issues. We have to invest in slowing down the intensity of what's happening, and that's reducing some of these climate-inducing pollutants. But here's the deal, Mike. In North Carolina and nationally, we have to invest more resources into our agriculture industry with our farmers so that we can keep pace with the changing climate. It's not about reversing or going back. It's how do we adapt to this changing climate. It's a national security issue.
Yes.
It's a basic food nutrition issue. And our farmers right now are getting hit the worst.
And the military has called climate change a national security issue because it causes migration. It causes all kinds of things that we don't even think about in our daily lives. So if the military is saying that, if we're watching farmers struggle to stay in business, to stay afloat, how can we deny it? And why aren't we doing something? Why aren't we doing more about it, or whatever we can do about it? Because some of it's going to be out of our control. How do you explain the recalcitrance?
Mike, we have made a mistake in not talking with the American people, North Carolinians, about climate change as a kitchen table issue. We've made it something other. The reality is, where you and I were talking earlier, insurance is going to go up. That's a kitchen table issue. Mm-hmm. As the climate intensifies and gets hotter, there are going to be a lot more mothers in the emergency room because asthma attacks are going to be on the rise. We're going to see a lot of our elderly people really hurting when we're hit with these heat spells. We have to learn to adapt. So we have to talk about these things from a public health standpoint, mm-hmm. from a cost standpoint, from a national security standpoint. This is not some fantastical idea to save some rare species, or we can't have more compassion for the polar bear than we do our brothers and sisters.
Right.
So some of this is messaging and how we connect with our neighbors. The other thing, Mike, I try very hard not to make these topics partisan. I've never seen pollution not impact a Republican or an independent or a conservative. As a matter of fact, Mike, when I did my environmental justice tour early in my tenure as EPA administrator, I saw the same problems in Lowndes County, Alabama, in the Deep South, primarily a African-American community. I saw the same things happening in West Virginia. And, you know, whether you're white or black, young or old, I think when you see straight pipes coming out of a house with that waste being dumped in a neighboring creek, when you talk with mothers in West Virginia who are bottle feeding their children with water that has fecal matter and bacteria in it. It doesn't matter whether you're white, black, Democrat, or Republican. We need to keep this pollution out of the water.
You mentioned that when you were EPA director, you traveled to a bunch of states. I've forgotten the number now.
We went to over 45 states.
Okay. So Lee Zeldin, who has been in the job for a year, has been to all 50 states so far, he says. I'm wondering what you learn as an EPA administrator, what you learn when you go to these places. Why do they travel to these places? And when you learn things, have you been able to put them into action? Because every state has different needs, wants, desires, and problems.
Yeah, I think, Mike, listen, I did 45 states in 4 years. It took me 4 years. I definitely didn't do 50 states in 1 year. Reason being is when I went to a state, I spent time. I spent time in the communities. I spent time with the governors. It wasn't a photo op. I spent time with mayors. I sat on porches with people, different backgrounds, different ideologies, and we would agree that no matter where we come from, everyone deserves clean air to breathe and clean water to drink. But there may be different ways to go about doing it. And so what you learn, Mike, when you travel the country is you understand the cultural sensitivities of every state, every region, and you think about how do I solve the problem using local solutions versus the paternalistic approach of Washington, D.C. When Governor Roy Cooper appointed me Secretary of the Environment during his first term, as I was being sworn in, I bumped into Governor Jim Hunt. And he shook my hand and grabbed my elbow very sternly. He said, Michael, you're from North Carolina, but you do not know this state until you visit all 100 counties. So I visited 90 counties, would have gotten to 100 but for COVID. But I can tell you, Mike, I learned things about this state and about the people in North Carolina that I would have never known. And that changed the way I approach regulations, permitting, and looking at environmental protection.
Michael Regan is our guest. He, as he just said, was the former Secretary of the North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality. He was also the former Secretary of the or Administrator of the EPA during the Biden administration. When we come back, I want to talk about one of the things you really concentrated on, and that is coal ash and some of the regulations that are being rolled back or threatened to be rolled back regarding coal ash and what the stakes are. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. Michael Regan is our guest, the 17th Secretary of the North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality in the Cooper administration and the 16th Administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency under President Biden. He's a Polis Distinguished Fellow at Duke's Sanford School of Public Policy. What do you do there? What is that all about?
You know, Mike, I'm having a great time meeting with faculty and students in sort of informal or seminar setting, talking about the importance of civil discourse, the importance of meeting people where they are. And I usually invite someone who thinks differently than I do to join me for a fireside chat. And we talk about our philosophies, our policies, our experiences, and then we open ourselves up for questioning.
Yeah, there are a whole lot of young people who grew up in the last 16 years who have experienced a lack of civil discourse, particularly in politics. It wasn't always this way. What we're living through is not normal, by 20th century standards at least. How valuable is it for them to understand that you can have a political difference with somebody and still have a civil conversation with them and actually have your mind changed? I've had my mind changed about things that I simply absolutely disagreed with until it was explained to me from their point of view in an intelligent, calm manner. Is it a revelation to these young people?
It is a revelation. It is eye-opening. And I'll tell you, the last event I held at Duke University, I invited Andrew Wheeler in to join me on stage, President Trump's EPA administrator during the first term. Mm-hmm. And he and I sat on stage together, and we talked about the fact that we had had prior conversations, that we both really loved the responsibility of running the agency. And then we talked about our different approaches to regulations and policies. The students stared at us like ghosts. I think the professors, donors, the general public could not believe that Andrew and I actually have a friendship. We have a difference of opinion We have strong differences in some areas, but we both respect each other as former administrators, and we both respect the mission of the agency. And so, you know, whether I think I'm right or, you know, whoever I'm debating or agreeing with thinks they're right, it is important for young people to see that if we're going to have a functioning government and a functioning society, we cannot be at each other's throats. I think what we're seeing on television and I think what we see in the media and on social media to get clicks is not an accurate portrayal of very hard work being done behind the scenes by people who happen to disagree.
You know, and this came to light yesterday when King Charles made his speech before a joint session of Congress, where he was talking about things that 10 years ago, 15 years ago would have seemed completely normal and certainly American. And he's a British subject. He's a British king. He's not an American. But it would have seemed very American. And he talked about things that got both aisle, sides of the aisle, on their feet, applauding for something as simple as separation of powers. And the importance of exercising the separation of powers. And it was a revelation. How do we get back to that?
my sister would say start with, putting civics back in, you know, middle school and high school. We're losing our way because we are not, number one, willing to come together and say, Mike, you're right, I'm wrong. There is an ego in politics, and there is a right way and a wrong way. And that's not the American way. We are very different people from different walks of life, different backgrounds. That is what has made this country great. And we are no longer having civil discourse. I still believe in the power of the best idea. And in order to figure out what the best idea is, you have to have a conversation, maybe a debate. But at the end of the day, and you and I talked about this in the beginning of the broadcast, I'm willing to be wrong. I'm willing to be educated. I don't know it all. And traveling across the country and meeting with communities and local mayors taught me firsthand. I thought I had a good idea, but that's not the best idea for this community. And they've had solutions for years. They just haven't had the attention or resources. We have to get back to seeing people, seeing problems and issues, and wanting to solve them as Americans, not as Democrats or Republicans.
Let's talk about something that you do disagree with regard to how the EPA is being run today. Lee Zeldin counts as wins the repeal of rules and that he describes as burdensome, streamlining permitting processes, revisions to chemical safety, and coal ash rules, among other things. One area that we have been talking about on this program for years and that the state has grappled with is coal ash. That's a byproduct, for people who don't know. It's a byproduct of burning coal to generate electricity. That ash is toxic, and it's got to go someplace. And in many places in the state, it's been sitting in these unlined pits, which leach. When it rains, it leaches the chemicals in the coal ash into the ground and into the groundwater and into streams and therefore into drinking water. Reduced federal oversight, I'm not sure what he plans for this. And so far, North Carolina is not part of these reductions. We have separate agreement. But what's at stake here? Because we're not the only state with coal ash.
You know, this is absolutely mind-blowing. When we reached our coal ash settlement in North Carolina, it was and still is the largest coal ash settlement in United States history.
Wow.
We worked hand in hand with Duke to say, listen, we have to do what's best for these communities. But obviously, Duke thought we have to do what's best for ourselves. Mike, rolling back these federal regulations really does introduce a legal vulnerability to all of these utilities that are incorrectly storing this coal ash. We proved scientifically here in North Carolina that coal ash was touching groundwater. That groundwater and those pollutants were leaching and having a negative impact on communities, which made the utility liable. There was a significant black cloud hanging over Duke's head because the entire world knew that Duke was not handling coal ash correctly because of the Dan River spill. And so we leveraged that educational opportunity where the news, the public, everyone understood coal ash is a bad thing. Why do I want that touching my drinking water?
You accomplished this as a Democrat working in for a Democratic governor with a Republican-controlled legislature and working, I would think, somewhat in opposition to one of the most powerful companies in the state of North Carolina, Duke Energy, and yet you did it. And when you came up before Congress to be for your interview, so to speak, to become the EPA administrator, you said that somebody said, maybe it was you, that the coal ash standards that you helped put in place in North Carolina could be used by the EPA as the national standard.
Absolutely.
How did you accomplish that, given all the parameters I just talked about, the legislature, the Duke Energy, et cetera? How did you accomplish it?
Well, you know, I think, listen, the reality is that when you look at the Dan River spill and who that spill impacted, that was in the backyard of Phil Berger. When you look at these coal ash ponds that were spread all across North Carolina, it was in both Democrat and Republican districts. And so when you educate the public that their water's polluted and tainted by a company like Duke Energy, you know, I think what you do is you work behind the scenes and you say, oh, I don't want to politicize this. This isn't a win for Michael Regan's DEQ. This isn't a win for Roy Cooper. This isn't a win for Tim Moore, Phil Berger. This is an opportunity to have a win for North Carolinians. And so we entered into a legally binding agreement where Duke agreed, based on our science, based on our engineering, that this coal ash needed to come out of these pits. Well, we decided at EPA that this is an approach that we should have on a national scale. And for the most part, Mike, as I traveled the country and talked with these utilities, they agreed. If the federal government actually required them to do this, then they could rate base it and they would have the resources to do it, and it would reduce their legal vulnerability. Mm-hmm. So I submit to you that what the Trump administration is doing now is not in the best interest of the public nor industry.
This is not a partisan issue. Your person's health is not Republican or Democrat, and yet it has become a partisan issue. They take a very different point of view than you just explained. Why?
There's a belief, Mike, that no regulations means cost savings for companies, and the rich get richer.
Which is more important, cost savings for companies or the public health?
Well, listen, let's attack this assumption that there are cost savings. Mike, they're not cost savings. These companies have to shift the money from investing in prevention into lawsuits and paying out for tainting water, ruining people's lives, causing cancer. You know, when you have a regulatory framework that everyone has to abide by, it makes the investment in the safer environment more competitive for every industry. And so you're going to spend the money in many cases one way or the other. Why not spend a smaller amount of money up front for prevention so that you don't have to spend the money in the back end? I can guarantee you, when you look at companies like DuPont and 3M, as they tackle this issue of PFAS and forever chemicals, it's going to cost them a lot more money to clean up their mess than it would be if they invested in technologies that wouldn't have put this stuff in the water in the first place.
So the first Trump administration rolled back climate and pollution regulations at the EPA. You came in, you reversed that. Now they're back again, and they're doing the rollbacks again, perhaps even more than before. We're living through climate change, which we've also already talked about. We're also living in a world where the poor seem to be more impacted by pollution and other hazards in the atmosphere that you've worked to protect and that they're rolling back regulations on. The poor are more affected than the wealthy. We don't live in places that are as impacted. Is there a way to set a course and maintain it and not have this back and forth and back and forth and two steps ahead, three steps back? Is there a way to do that? Or is there always a need for periodic adjustments in approach?
You know, Mike, I think there is nothing wrong with nibbling around the edges to make mid-course corrections. Mm-hmm. Here's the reality. When I came into office at EPA, and you correctly articulated that we reversed some of the decisions that were made by the first Trump administration. That is true. But what you also have to understand is the changes that I made put us back on course to match the investments that industry had been making prior to the Obama administration. You know, a utility just doesn't wake up on a Monday and say, I'm going to spend $3 billion, and then on Tuesday changes its mind. No, these are 10, 15, 20-year investments. And so when this administration is deciding to roll back technology standards, while we want these guarantees in place, I can assure you these companies are not just going to start backsliding and pulling these investments out of the ground. They have to keep going. Why? Because they're competing on a global stage.
Right. The Biden administration encouraged private sector, public sector, local and state governments, and individuals to invest in clean energy, in electric vehicles, and decarbonization. There were electric vehicle tax credits in place during the Biden administration. This administration is focused on fossil fuels. He made no bones about it in the campaign. Burn, drill, baby, drill. They've turned away from renewable energy. He thinks windmills are harmful to the atmosphere, or to something, God knows what. This is all happening as China, who used to have a terribly air-polluted environment, has been leading the world in solar and battery technology and electric vehicles. We are told that their electric vehicles make ours look like Model Ts. It could be argued that because of their horrific pollution problem, they needed to do this in China. And they've done a considerable amount of cleanup because evidently they don't have that problem as much anymore. Are they just playing catch up, or are they leapfrogging over us? And if that's the case, what does that mean for us?
Oh, Mike, it's troublesome. They have leapfrogged.
Okay.
And not only can Xi Jinping wake up and say, I want to invest trillions in an advanced technology and market and it take off, and we have to go through our legislative process to get these investments. But they make these decisions and they're moving forward. And not only are they trying or attempting to own the lead of developing these technologies, they're also buying up all the minerals and trying to lock down the supply chains as well. This is a national security issue. This is a global competitive issue. And it just so happens that these technologies are more efficient, they're cleaner, and they're going to make any country's economy better if they invest in this. And one thing I want to say, Mike, that is very, very important. China and the Middle East are investing way more into battery storage, solar, a more efficient grid. And when you think about the Middle East, who most perceive as overly reliant on oil, why would those countries be investing more than we are in the things that make them faster and stronger?
The world does run on oil today, but that won't always be the case. And the technology advancements are happening exponentially, and China is helping greatly in that effort. If America wants to remain energy independent, don't we have to embrace these technologies?
It's a must. It is... Mike, no one came up to you or your parents and said, rip out the old phone on the wall and you must have a cell phone.
Right.
The market just overtook. That's what's happening now, with the exception of now, our government is actually hampering our ability to embrace modern technology. It doesn't have to be ideological. It doesn't have to be I'm anti-fossil. Fossil costs more and hurts us more.
Michael Regan used to run the EPA under the Biden administration. He used to run the Department of Environmental Quality in North Carolina. Today, he is the Polis Distinguished Fellow at Duke Sanford School of Public Policy, among other things. Thank you for being here, and thank you for the hour.
Oh, it was a pleasure, Mike.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, Visit WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.